Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is our 31st episode, scheduled for release on July 11th, although I highly doubt it'll be done that soon. For the last part of the episode, we will have the conclusion of the Joshy Berger interview. It was just too good to cut out half of it and just,
Yeah, so there's about another almost 40 minutes of Joshy to listen to.
Yes.
And it's more than worth the wait.
Yeah, I'm trying my best to not go too long in episodes, trying to keep it definitely under 2 hours. If it'd been like 202, I probably would have just let it slide through, but 220, no, I went ahead and cut that. It was 220 or 230 is what it would have been, and figured, nope, I'll cut that last part. It was a good spot to cut it, and you'll get to hear all the rest, and it's it's awesome. So look forward to that. Anyway, I am Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Bathroom problems from hell that are finally concluded, but other than that, I'm doing all right.
Huh. Yeah, I had the Boise 4th of July parade, the Treasure Valley Coalition of Reason marched in the parade. We used my truck for our float once again, and this time some friends and I put together a PVC frame to go around my truck to hang banners from. Made it much easier to anchor stuff and greatly decreased the risk of stuff scratching my vehicle.
You do have a pretty truck.
Yeah. Now the downside of it was with how fucking hot it's been here, and it's fortunately finally cooled down. The day we did that, it got up to 105 degrees.
Oh, fuck that.
And even though we started pretty early for a Sunday morning, it was, I think, 9:30 or 10 o'clock when we got started, it was already a good 85 degrees. And by the time we wrapped up at 2:30 or so, it was already 99 degrees. And I forgot to keep drinking water. So by the end of the day, yeah, we all had some kind of heat exhaustion, but I had pretty bad case of heat exhaustion, really bad dehydration, and came really close to going to the hospital. It was that
nice.
Bad. Yeah.
Nice.
And then, of course, 4th of July had the parade and the Coalition of Reason. We had a barbecue afterwards, and then I had to go take a shift at the barbecue at work, and I was out in the, fortunately, a little bit cooler heat, but out in the heat again, this time making sure I was drinking more than enough fluids, from 8 in the morning to 7 in the evening. And once again, yeah, I was not doing so hot. So it's been hot, and I've not been doing well with it. All right. Anyway, moving on, we have feedback. From Rory, who we read his email that he sent for the last one. Thanks for reading my last email. I got riled up about the topic, but you corrected me on the weaker points of the email, and I appreciate that. Thanks again for reading your listeners' correspondence, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, Rory actually sent another one.
Yes, he did.
Like a couple hours later.
if even that. Looking at it. Yeah, it was pretty close to the same exact time. Hey, sorry I wouldn't usually bombard you with emails like this, but that interview on episode 30 is awesome. Really cool guy, cool interview, and I can't wait to hear the second half.
Yeah, Joshy is all kinds of badass. I'd interview him anytime.
Yes.
I would hang out with him anytime.
Yes. Moving on to further feedback, we got a comment from Brian on Facebook. Wow, Joshy is awesome. Glad it's a part one. In response, Joshy wrote, I know, right? We also got another donation off of PayPal, this time, sweet, from April. So April, thank you very much for your support. And as a reminder, you can always, you know, any of you can just click the donate button on the website.
April, you rock. Kick ass. This day in history, July 11th, 1767, John Quincy Adams is born. So, John Quincy Adams, he's the son of the second U.S. president, John Adams. He's born in Braintree, Massachusetts. What can I say? Dude kind of followed in his father's footsteps, had a passion for politics, and he actually went with his father on many diplomatic missions from the time he was 14, entered the legal profession after completing his schooling. This dude actually kind of rocked from a young-ass age. Young man, he was actually a minister to a variety of countries, including Prussia, the Netherlands, Portugal, Russia, and England. 1803 was the first time he was a Republican in the Senate, and he even helped negotiate the Treaty of Ghent that ended the War of 1812. Let's see, 1817, he was appointed the Secretary of State under Quincy Adams, a position he kept until 1824 when he ran for the presidency. Man, this guy kind of kicked ass.
Yes, he did. He didn't mess around.
No, hell of a go-getter. So, rather than retire after presiding at the pinnacle of presidential politics, Adams returned to the Congress after he was president. Preferred the legislative duties to being in the presidency, which he described as the four most miserable years of my life. Beginning in 1831, he served in the U.S. House of Representatives, which I kind of see as a step down from the Senate, but chairing congressional committees on the economy, Indian affairs, and foreign relations. He even found time to argue the controversial Amistad slave ship case in the Supreme Court. Man, this guy just was kind of an all-around decent dude.
Mm-hmm.
He actually died from suffered from a stroke in 1846. 2 years later, in 1848, just after participating in a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives, he actually succumbed to a more massive and ultimately fatal stroke. Died 2 days later in a room in the Capitol building, which he had had for many years during his public service. Damn.
Yeah. A very interesting person.
Good on him. Can use a few of them guys now.
Yeah.
So, July 11th, 1804, Aaron Burr slays Alexander Hamilton in a duel. Okay, first let me say, the fuck? a duel in Weehawken, New Jersey, Vice President Aaron Burr fatally shoots his longtime political antagonist, Alexander fucking Hamilton. Hamilton was the leader of the Federalists and the chief architect of America's political economy. Hamilton died the following day. So, crazy as this sounds, neither of them were actually, well, cold-blooded killers or anything like that. Just kind of a weird thing they used to do.
Yeah, it was considered to be things that gentlemen did.
Fuck. If that's a gentleman, holy shit. So, Aaron Burr, he was born into a prestigious New Jersey family in 1756. Very gifted and, very smart guy, I should say. Graduated from the College of New Jersey, which later became Princeton, at the age of 17. He joined the Continental Army in 1775 and was distinguished during the Patriot attack on Quebec. Masterful politician, he's called. He was elected to the new state assembly in 1783 and later served as a state attorney. In 1790, he defeated Alexander Hamilton's father-in-law in a race for the U.S. Senate. So, yeah, there was bad blood even way back in the day there between the two families. So, not too surprising that that this happened, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Man, fucking weird. There's quite a few quite a few of these duels back in the day.
Yes.
Of very famous
people.
Yeah,
it was, like I said, it was something that gentlemen would do to resolve disputes.
Odd.
Yeah.
Anyways, July 11th, 1979, Skylab crashes into the Earth. That was actually our first attempt at a space station, which was used for quite a few years. But, the damn thing crashed down into the Indian Ocean and parts of Australia. Of course, no one was hurt from the craft because it had been abandoned for a few years. And nobody on the ground or in the sea was hurt either. Skylab was launched in 1973. It was the world's first successful space station. The first manned Skylab mission came 2 years after the Soviet Union launched Soyuz 1, the world's first space station into orbit around the Earth. However, unlike the ill-fated Solnit, which I know I'm pronouncing wrong, and was also plagued with problems, the American space station was a great success, housing three separate manned crews for extended periods of time. So, yeah, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that's kind of interesting here is on its history.
Hmm.
They built it out of the spent third stage of a Saturn V rocket that had been used for an Apollo mission to the moon.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it really is. Recycling something like that.
So it was just floating around and they just made use of it.
No, it wasn't floating around. It was on the Earth and yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, they took it up afterwards.
Yes, and
okay. They
sent it up into probably on another Saturn V rocket. it was pretty cool. Only did three missions on it, and it was, you know, it wasn't like it was continuously inhabited like the International Space Station is, but damn, pretty cool that we did that early.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't made to be up there that long. Seems between the three crews that were up there, they only spent about 700 hours observing the sun, and they actually, holy crap, took 175,000 solar pictures while they were up there.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I mean, that would take forever to load up on a Facebook.
Yeah.
But cool. Yeah. Hey, sweet.
Alrighty.
All right.
Moving on.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Pretty slow news, but news day.
Yeah. I'm not going to blame it on the news, just that we've both been insanely busy and we are even
that
less
too.
Prepared than normal.
Yay.
Big Brain has been launched. What they did is they took a brain of a 65-year-old woman who passed away and uses new 3D mapping techniques to create an awesome, freely available online atlas of the human brain. And it's actually got a resolution of 20 microns in each dimension.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Hence why it's being called Big Brain. So if you want to take a look at the human brain, there you go.
Now's your chance.
Yeah. To create this, they actually used a tool called Microtome to slice the brain. And it was already embedded in paraffin wax. They sliced it into more than 7,000 sections, each one 20 microns thick. Hence why that's the resolution they were able to get.
Damn.
And yeah, this is, you know, they took these sections, mounted them on slides and stained them to look at the cellular architecture, and then scanned and reconstructed by a supercomputer.
And that, I believe that is about four times the thickness of I think a human hair is four times that thick.
Yeah, something like that.
So according to Wiki Answers, human hair varies from 50 to 120 microns. So on average, human hair is usually around 100 microns.
Okay. All right.
That's amazingly thin.
A new study has been published. This actually came out of Italy on the efficiency and safety of electronic cigarettes.
This one should be near and dear to
you.
Yes.
Now, what sucks is in the time frame they started collecting this data, what was available was crap. Absolute crap. And I can say with absolute certainty that if what was available to me was what they had available for the study, it would not have worked to get me off of cigarettes.
Hmm.
Just not enough nicotine in them and just too low quality of equipment. And one of the other factors is when you switch to electronic cigarettes after a couple of weeks, your sense of taste and smell start coming back. And all of a sudden, you recognize how crappy tobacco actually tastes. Yeah, so anyway, what they found with this, and here is what was even more surprising. They did look at some that had no nicotine, and they found that it was very effective at getting people to switch off of cigarettes, very effective at getting people to quit all nicotine use altogether, and also very effective at... Well, and far healthier looking at carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide levels in these patients. And so at 12 weeks and 52 weeks, they found smoking reduction in 22.3% and 10.3% of the study participants, respectively. Completely breaking from tobacco smoking was found in 10.7 and 8.7% at those same intervals. And yeah, again, they found a lot fewer effects from withdrawals and other things than you typically find with somebody just quitting cold turkey. One of the key conclusions of the study, and I watched the video of the press conference they did. I wish I'd actually had the time to read the full article. what they found is, or what they're recommending is that, well, A, governments should not be banning these out of fear. At the very least, they are safer and a lot better for you than tobacco cigarettes. And the EU is considering a ban right now. So they are, you know, this study, the timing of its publication was probably somewhat intentional there because, you know, this doctor, based on the research that he just did, feels very strongly that this needs to be available to help smokers find something less harmful. And the other thing he recommends is further research using what's available today.
All right. So the EU isn't trying to ban cigarettes,
nope.
Are they?
Nope.
But they're trying to ban these.
Yep.
Okay. That doesn't make much sense.
Nope.
I mean, it's a less harmful thing that's a good stepping stone to get away from cigarettes. Why in the fuck would they do that?
That's okay. A good question. I don't get it. It's yeah. But one of the key things that the researcher did bring out is with the advances in the technology available, there is a wider variety of flavors. There is a wider variety of equipment available to use. And with the stuff that was available at that time, it's not going to last very long. You have to switch out cartridges quite frequently. The batteries don't last very long. And when you're using stuff like that, it is a lot more convenient to just open up a pack of cigarettes and light one. At the point that you're using equipment like I use, it is far more convenient than smoking a cigarette because you can fill up a tank that will last you all day and use batteries that will last you all day. And if you just pull it out of your pocket and press a button, that is a hell of a lot more convenient than pulling a cigarette out of a pack and igniting it. So,
Makes sense.
Just the convenience aspect is something that has changed a lot and definitely merits further study. I think the research he was doing, or the study he did was in 2009, and it's just taken this long to actually get it published.
Damn.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. The study he did was in 2010 and on into 2011.
Still.
Yeah, that's old.
Well.
All right. Now for politics and religion. when we were recording our last episode, we did, we knew the Supreme Court was starting to release its rulings, and we knew that the decisions on the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8 in California were going to be coming. And while I was editing, those did come out, and I did plug in a little acknowledgement of that. So now we get to actually talk about it.
Yeah.
The key provisions in DOMA, the ones that make it so that the government cannot recognize same-sex marriages, was thrown out as unconstitutional. And the Defense of Marriage Act, and California's Proposition 8 was thrown out on grounds of standing.
Basically got pushed back to the lower court.
They said that the people that had brought the case, had brought the appeal, had no legal justification or legal standing to appeal that lower court's decision. And within about 2 days, the state attorney general started performing some marriages. They moved fast. Now, what this really all means is quite uncertain at this point. Yes, same-sex marriage is legal in California right now. But with the throwing out of DOMA, yes, it definitely means that if you are in a same-sex relationship in a state that recognizes same-sex relationships, you're legally married in the United States. They have already started to do immigration cases with sponsoring spouses that are same-sex. This will definitely impact military benefits and all other federal employment benefits, Social Security benefits. But what they haven't quite figured out yet is, how is this going to apply to people that got married in a state that allows same-sex marriage and live in a state that doesn't?
Well, if they're in Michigan, that might be interesting, for sure.
There's a lot of states that have specifically banned it, put it in their state constitutions, and
there's a lot of states that are specifically assholes.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. But they haven't yet figured out, like, joint tax returns. If you got married in Washington and then moved to Idaho, could two men that are married file a joint tax return? And so that's going to be up to the administration to determine how they're going to apply that. And regardless of how they apply it, it is going to bring further court cases. Because if they apply it to where it only counts if you live in a state that recognizes that marriage, then there's going to be lawsuits that the federal government is ignoring. Well, basically the same issue that came up with DOMA in that exact case. And if they go with recognizing all same-sex marriages, regardless of the laws of the state that person resides in, then they're going to run into issues. There will be cases where people will sue because their state doesn't recognize their marriage that even the federal government recognizes.
Well, this just kind of reminds me of the Miranda case, where it's going to have to be in some state that doesn't recognize, that doesn't really give a crap about some of their people, and they're going to get challenged in court. And so we just need more court cases to kind of eke all of this through the works.
Yeah. Within days of the ruling being announced, Representative Tim Hoolscamp. Sure. I'll call him Hoolscamp. Representative Tim Hoolscamp, who here on call Scamp. Scamp of Kansas has proposed a federal amendment to define marriage as being between one man and one woman.
Right.
This has been tried before and failed, and there is little chance it would make it through the House. There is zero chance it would make it through the Senate, and there is no way that enough states would endorse this. 3/4 of the states, not going to happen.
Nope.
You can't get 3/4 of the states when you've already got, 12 out of the 50 that allow for same-sex marriage?
And there's a few that are teetering also.
So, yeah, he's a jackass. He's showing that he's a jackass, and it's not going to work.
Well, I mean, it's technically possible. I mean, 12, that's just 48. It's It's possible to get three quarters, but definitely not probable.
Actually, I think it's 13.
States if there's... Okay, well... Okay.
a quarter of the... Just over a quarter. Or if it is 12. Yeah.
12 is 48. That'd leave a couple extra.
Just under a quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's 13, then they would be just under 75.
Okay, let me find the count. 13 states, including California now. California's number 13. Plus 5 Native American tribes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
I love that part.
5 Native tribes. Yep. All right.
So, yeah, with that, there's enough states that it wouldn't make it through. And besides, there's a lot of states that just don't like the idea of amending the Constitution. There's a lot of conservatives that don't like the idea of amending the Constitution. So it would, it's not going to happen. It won't even make it out of Congress. Now, about a week before the Supreme Court announced their rulings, there was a jackass, Gary Glenn of the Michigan American Family Association, who had some really stupid things to say based on the possible options for how the Supreme Court would have ruled. And I'm going to go ahead and just play what he said now.
So I will say simply this, that if the United States Supreme Court next week overturns the vote of 31 states to define in their state constitutions, I will encourage, and the American Family Association of Michigan will encourage, and I hope you'll encourage, Governor Rick Snyder and all of the governors of all of those 31 states to do what Abraham Lincoln did regarding the Dred Scott decision, which said that a black man and a black woman are not citizens, therefore have no rights. Abraham Lincoln ignored the ruling of the United States Supreme Court. We will call on Governor Snyder to equally ignore an unjust law from the United States Supreme Court and defend the vote of the people of Michigan and our state constitution. Yeah. I would say simply that with the heritage we have from the freedom fighters and the freedom riders who came before us, and with our children's freedom and our faith and our liberty at issue, God forbid, God forgive us if we fail to stand. Yes. But if we do, as Martin Luther King said, we should do to fulfill our Christian duty, we will threaten those, we will overcome those who threaten our faith and freedom, and we will be proud to stand with you in that struggle for our faith. We will be blessed for doing so, and God bless and keep you strong for those fights ahead.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
This is comic gold.
Yeah. It's hilarious to think that judicial rulings to protect the liberty of minorities goes against freedom.
He's telling everybody to basically go on like the Scottish decision never happened, that Doma never got killed, and that, you know, it's all right to still discriminate against people. He even called in Abraham Lincoln talking about the Dred Scott case, saying that, you know, black people are, well, people too. And now he's trying to use this opportunity to belittle, well, another segment of our population. Mm-hmm. How in the fuck are you going to use the Lincoln and the Dred Scott case to do that?
Well, especially since the Dred Scott case was a decision that did support the institution of slavery. And as far as Lincoln's actions go with slaves, the Emancipation Proclamation is horribly misunderstood.
Yeah, true. But
it didn't apply to slaves in any states within the United States. It didn't apply to any states that were in, or slaves in states that were in rebellion that were under Confederate control. It did nothing. Slavery was not abolished until the 13th Amendment. That was actually done through the legal processes and after Lincoln's death. So he doesn't understand history, for one.
I have a feeling that Gary Glenn doesn't even realize any of this. He's just looking for a famous person that's ignoring one of the Supreme Court decisions. And all better that it's one of our great fathers of the country.
But it's just like, okay, so many people on the religious right, they love to misquote and misuse historical great figures.
No, definitely. You
know, people will try to use Thomas Jefferson to support the U.S. being a Christian nation. Or even more ridiculous, John Adams, who was very enthusiastic in his signing the Treaty of Tripoli, which is explicitly stated that we are not a Christian nation. And they want to try to twist his quotes to say we're a Christian nation. It's just insane. And he's doing the same exact thing. He's trying to ride in on Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King Jr.'s coattails to do totally the wrong thing. And encouraging people to ignore the Supreme Court, that's not going to go over very well.
I sure as hell hope not. Man.
If he got a governor, if the Supreme Court had ruled that same-sex couples have equal rights in all states. They didn't go that far, unfortunately. But if they had, and a governor said, we're not going to do that, that would not work.
Glenn actually had a lovely quote. Says, with the heritage we have from the freedom fighters and the freedom riders who came before us, Glenn declared, God forgive us if we fail to stand. But if we do, as Martin Luther King said, we should do to fulfill our Christian duty, we will threaten those, we will overcome those who threaten our faith and freedom, and we will be proud to stand with you in that struggle for our faith, and we'll be blessed for doing so. First is Martin Luther King Jr., of course, mm-hmm. But holy crap. Yes, gay marriage threatens faith and freedom. Oh.
Yeah, how? How does it do that?
What a fucking asshat. Oh, boy, goodness. Yeah, every person that was part of the civil rights struggle, the freedom riders, freedom fighters, all of that, it is just like the Christians being put down and belittled because gay people love each other and want to get married. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Holy crap. 1960s are calling. They want you back.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
It's pathetic. Yeah. All right, man.
All right, let's go ahead.
I'll blow a gasket on that.
Let's go ahead and move on.
Sure.
All right. So there was a abortion bill in Texas that got some interesting attention. This bill would have damn near banned abortion in Texas. I think it would have left 4 abortion clinics able to operate in the state of Texas, and all of them in the eastern half of the state. There would have been people living in places where the nearest one would have been something like 700 miles away. Yeah. So, Senator Wendy Davis, a Democrat from Fort Smith, spent the day of the vote doing an old-fashioned filibuster. She actually got a mention from Barack Obama's campaign Twitter account. Her own Twitter account went from 1,200 followers to 20,000. The rules that the Texas Senate has stipulated that she had to stay on topic, couldn't lean on her desk or the podium, couldn't take any breaks, couldn't eat, couldn't use the restroom, couldn't get any assistance from anybody else, and they would have to cite her on violations of that, and it was a 3 strikes and you're out thing. So they started citing her on points of order, including one because she made remarks about a past law that was under consideration about sonograms. And that kind of is relevant when you're talking about laws put in place to restrict or shame women out of abortions. That applies here. That is relevant. It is on topic. And anyway, they went ahead and shut her down after three supposed points of order. They ended it just minutes before midnight. There was then a very strong response from protesters, and including some that went into the Senate chamber. And the Senate president had to have security get them out and actually said, "Get them out. Time is running out. I want them out of here." And then, it's crazy. So from there, they did the vote, and then they fudged the record to make it look to make it look like the vote had taken place before the midnight deadline. And
yeah, somebody actually stepped up and said, no, it was after midnight.
Uh-huh. So the state lieutenant governor, David Dewhurst, who had been claiming it was in time, eventually said that it wasn't. He finally fessed up. It was a few minutes after, but yeah.
Well, hey, that's enough.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's out. They could try to bring it back. And yeah, in addition to just the facility requirements, they would also require that doctors had to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles, which many rural communities don't have a hospital within 30 miles, and would also ban any abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy, which directly violates Roe versus Wade. So it's a good thing this one failed. If it hadn't, they could have been looking forward to court rulings against them.
I know we got some good people in Texas, but the state as a whole could still use a few good smackdowns.
Yeah.
They're getting a little unruly down there.
The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that the corporation known as Hobby Lobby can be considered a religious person.
The fuck?
Yeah. This is because Hobby Lobby is challenging the part of the Affordable Care Act that requires coverage of contraceptives without a copay.
God damn it.
And so far, they've been requiring that non-religious organizations, in other words, for-profit companies and non-religious nonprofits, have to comply. Well, Hobby Lobby has somehow managed to convince a court of appeals that their business is a religious person. So now not only do businesses have... Yeah, it's nuts.
Well, let's see. The decision, which was a combination of six separate opinions totaling 165 pages, could be considered a coming attraction of how the lower courts will rule when it considers the merits of questions of whether or not the contraception mandate is unconstitutional. On the issue of whether for-profit corporations are religious persons, the court split 5-3, with the majority finding that if they are owned by religiously devout individuals who control the company's affairs, such as corporations that are protected by Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the FRA, a law designed to shield individuals from that law that substantially burden the freedom of exercise. So, basically, if the company owner is very religious, then they don't have to subscribe to the Affordable Care Act. So Chick-fil-A is next, I'm guessing, yeah. If they even have health care.
What's really terrifying here is if corporations can absorb the religious beliefs of their owners, does that mean that corporations can discriminate against people based on sexual orientation, religion, gender, race?
That's just ass.
yeah.
I do love some good RC cars, gas-powered RC cars and trucks, and I am not going to buy anything from these people ever again.
Yeah, this is pretty scary to see. I really hope this gets pushed up to the Supreme Court and cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, the court didn't go so far as to say that corporations are religious persons. under their constitution, just under the RFRA, but only because Congress never decided to exclude them in the definition of who was a person under the act. So,
yeah, argument from silence.
Come on. Yeah, basically. Kind of sounds like Washington's pistol open carry law. Well, there is no law that says you can open carry with a firearm, but there's no law that says you can't. So, therefore, it's not illegal. Mm-hmm.
In this case, a law that talked about people, because they don't specifically say it doesn't include corporations, do you really have to specify that laws about individual liberty end up applying to businesses or don't apply to corporations? That's just, it's mind-boggling. The Pew Forum on Religious and Public Life has published a new study on the growth of non-religious people in America. This was based on very, you know, recent trends they've noticed in their research, showing that about 20% of the overall public and about a third of adults under 30 are religiously unaffiliated, and a third of all adults saying that they don't consider themselves a religious person, and two-thirds of Americans, whether affiliated or unaffiliated, saying that religion is losing its influence in people's lives. This new one.
Oh, no.
The question was, the growth of the non-religious in America, good or bad? Out of all adults, 48% said that it was bad, 11% said it was good, and 39% said it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm happy with it doesn't matter.
Yes, I am too. A full 50%, 2% more than think it's bad, think it's either good or it doesn't matter. Now, when you look at the responses from different religious groups, white evangelical Protestants, 4% think it's a good thing. I'm guessing mm-hmm. those 4% are secretly atheists. 16% think it doesn't matter, and a whopping 78% think it's bad. Numbers are not quite as bad, but pretty similar. For black Protestants, 6% good, 28% doesn't make a difference, 64% bad. White Catholics, 5% good thing, 38% doesn't make a difference, 56% bad. White mainline Protestants, 6% good, 46% indifferent, 45% bad. Hispanic Catholics are a surprising one at 11% thinking it's a good thing, 48% thinking it doesn't make a difference, and 36% thinking it's bad. That is 59% thinking it is either good or neutral. Out of the unaffiliated in the survey, 24% think it's a good thing, 55% think it doesn't matter, and I'm kind of surprised that 19% think it's a bad thing. 19% of people without any religious affiliation think it's a bad thing that there are more and more people that don't have religious affiliation.
Yeah. Sometimes if you see an article that is talking about how atheists are bemoaning all of the religious things that are bad in the world, like all the priestly rape of children and stuff like that, that it's not really all the religious people that are coming to the rescue. It's the ones that are, like, not very religious mm-hmm. that are coming to the rescue.
So, anyway, it's really good to see that the trend of people that think that this trend is good is growing.
Hmm.
Or who think it doesn't matter. And realistically,
I'm perfectly fine with that. To see, hey, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right.
So, sweet.
And now it's time for the conclusion of Joshi's interview. Okay, so you're on the Food Network.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
How in the fuck did you get there?
Yes.
Well, I was dating this girl that was American, but she was Ukrainian originally. And she wrote a letter to the producers of the show. And, like, the show, for people that don't know, is called Worst Cooks in America. And they take, like, 16 people that don't know how to cook. They pair them up with two famous chefs. And they put them through boot camp every day. They wake up at 5 in the morning. They cook for 13 hours a day. And every week, they vote someone off until there's two people left, each person representing their chef. And they have to fool a group of culinary experts, you know, from the New York Times, from Zagat's, whatever, to pretend that the actual cooks, the chefs cooked that meal and they picked the one. Then they reveal to the experts that these are people that didn't even know how to make fried eggs a few weeks ago and so on and so forth. Other than Iron Chef America, it is the highest rated show on Food Network. For the simple reason that most people can relate to it. Most people watch, you know, Chopped or other shows on Food Network, and you can't really relate to it. I can't do what this person is doing in 30 minutes. But if you take some asshole here that, you know, couldn't make ice a week ago, and now all of a sudden he's making chicken cacciatore and other things, I can follow along, and I feel like I can sort of do it. Now, we all know that the average person that comes in the show is, you know, it's some, you know, middle-aged woman whose husband says to the producers, as they show them in the intro, my wife, you know, can't make lunch for our kids. We're all miserable. Please teach her how to cook or we're going to be blah, blah, blah. So the people who cast the show and the producers are hard bent to find angles to make the show a little bit more interesting. So, you know, they have the token gay guy, they have the token black guy, they have the Asian girl, so on and so forth. But they didn't have a wild card like me. So my my ex-girlfriend wrote a letter to the producers of the show saying, look, dating this guy, he grew up Hasidic and, you know, he refuses to mix milk and meat, which I did. You know, you can't, you have to wait 6 hours after you eat meat before you can eat milk. He refuses to eat pork or shellfish or anything. You know, I'm Ukrainian, I'm Russian. I, you know, I love shellfish and, you know, I keep finding myself sneaking down into the kitchen and eating from his roommate's food and stuff like that. And you know what? I got a call from the producers of the show saying, hey, you Joshy Berger? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, well, would you like to come down for an interview, for an audition, whatever? And I was like, oh, whatever. I showed up Saturday for an audition and there were like 5,000-6,000 people at the audition in New York. And this is just a New York audition. They had auditions in Chicago, Atlanta, all over, you know, California.
Oh, wow.
And I was hungover and they were, I was like, I'm not fucking staying here for 10 hours to get my audition. But then like, you know, they saw me with my wife be there with a cute girl and they were like, no, just come for your audition. And they dragged me into a room and they said, so what's your story? I'm like, look, I was intentionally doing a little bit drunk over the top. I said, look, I don't care if she fucks my roommate, but if she eats his food, that's disrespectful. And they were like, oh my God, we love you. Yeah. Cause you know, they got the straight guy that's like a little bit over the top and you know, but still, you know, he's, you know, he's intelligent and he's fun. He's a bit, you know, Jewy Guido like. What's going on here? And usually the way it works in like, just like, you know, American Idol, you have to audition and then you go to another segment and like it takes you like 8 times until you actually go in front of the cameras. But like the first audition when I did that, they gave us a little paper and it said in it, just let him into the fucking studio. And they said, just hand that to whatever, Brian or whatever. And we went and we said, we were told to give you this. And they just brought me into this huge room immediately. And you know, we came into a room, there were like 100 cameras there. 100 is an exaggeration, but there were a bunch of cameras and Anne Burrell and like Robert Irvine, the two chefs. I knew nothing about these people at that point, were there with like producers and everything. And like I was so on. I was just like not intimidated by them. And I was like what they call camera friendly. And like I bought some like Jewish dish that I had and they're like, oh my God, ew, what is this? I'm like, what is this? This is what kept my people alive for thousands of years. How dare you say that? And they were giggling and laughing. And I can see like their producers raising their thumbs in the background. And I knew that like, you know, they were really excited. And like, boom, within like a week, I had like a limo come and pick me up. Well, first they did a background check to make sure that I'm not insane. And, they came to pick me up and it was a life changing event. The next 2 to 3 months were, I mean, life changing. Even had I not won the show, the fact that you, I mean, people pay $100,000 to go to, you know, culinary school. I got to sit one-on-one, 3 feet away from one of the best chefs in the world every day for months and watch them. I have no idea why people didn't take this more seriously. I'm just a little bit, you know, ADHD and insane. But the bottom line is like, I valued and I treasured this opportunity and I, you know, I just made the most of it. Now, I'm not going to lie and I'm not going to pretend that the fact that I was good for TV and good for the producers didn't help me in winning the show. I'm not going to try to pretend that there's a chance that my food wasn't better than other people's foods. But the bottom line is I did what I needed to do the entire time and it worked out for me. I mean, I love the fact that there was not a single higher rated show other than NBA All-Star Game, I think the entire summer than our show.
Nice.
Yeah. And again, it changed my life. I mean, I wasn't a cook. I wasn't anything. Now I like, you know, I encounter with disdain when people order food. I've never bought in the year and a half since I've been on the show. I've never bought a dressing. I've never done anything. I make everything from scratch. You know, even if it's something simple like, you know, vinaigrette or any, like burgers, I'm disgusted. Unless it's a top notch burger joint, I'm like disgusted with how do you fuck up a burger? How does someone not make a delicious burger? How do you not make great fries? How are you not aware of the double frying process? How are you not aware of how to saute, you know, how to sear food properly, how to just, you know, cook vegetables, everything. I'm like, I can't understand how people are not foodies. I mean, I fucking love food now. And I'm like, Food Network changed my life.
All right. So the next time I come out your way, I'm eating at your place.
Yes, I got my fennel crusted peppercorn burgers that everyone talks about. I've put like a spin on all the food. Like I love food. When I'm stressed out and when I'm having a bad day, I come home at 4 o'clock. I got an island. I push it towards the TV. I put something on. I cook. I chop vegetables. It's relaxing. I feel so bad for people that are just not into food and not into cooking and so on. This has nothing to do with skepticism.
Hey, I'm serious. Hey, skeptics fucking eat too. And I'm serious. I'm coming over.
No, but actually this has something to do with skepticism because before I went on the TV show, I was like, I'm going to give a whole skeptical angle to this whole show. And I bought all these skeptical cooking books and I bought like this, this book, which I recommend to everyone called What Einstein Told His Cook. And it's a book about common myths relating to the kitchen and science and chemistry and all that. And then there was a second book that I bought called What Einstein Forgot to Told His Cook, whatever. And I knew everything about cooking and chemistry. And I, even though they told me, oh my God, I might get in trouble for saying this and they might take my prize away. But they told me to not do any research, that they like the level of cooking that I'm at now and I should please keep it that way. But I read all these books and I was like, oh, when should you put the salt into the water when you're cooking pasta? Does it matter if you're putting it after or before? Does it raise the temperature of the water? And I was reading all these skeptical things about cooking. And I realized pretty quickly when you get to that, these chefs are a bunch of egomaniac assholes that they don't want to be proven wrong because they were wrong on a bunch of things. But I was like, pretty much, Joshy, shut up and play the game. And I played the game. I was like, you know, there were a bunch of assholes that thought they were smart. And they're like, oh, well, what does it matter? This and that. And they're like, are you fucking kidding me? Get off. You know, you're getting voted off this week. But there is so much skepticism that goes along with food that, you know what? Maybe one day I'm going to produce a show or a blog or something that discusses all these things.
And you should. We need
fucking A.
Yeah. Every different angle will draw in a slightly different crowd. And if we have enough different angles out there, we could reach everybody.
100%. And I love it. There's so much chemistry and there's so much. My mother, who's a great cook, it saddens me that I don't speak to my mother now. I haven't spoken to her in like 5 years. And it saddens me because my mother's a fantastic cook. And I wish that I can just impart some of the wisdom that I learned on a cooking show that she wasn't privy to. She just has, you know, the information that she had from her parents and what she learned and, you know, the trial and error that she's done over the years. But there are certain things that you can't learn due to trial and error. There are certain things that you just need to know from a chemistry point of view, the Maillard effect and other things regarding cooking that, you know what, I'm probably going to die without speaking to my mother. I'm sorry for making this a very morbid part of the show. But one of the things that hurts me, you know, my brother used to tell me that my mom would watch my show with him and she was secretly rooting for me and so on and so forth, even though we weren't on speaking terms. And, you know, Mom, I know you're not listening out there, but I got some cooking tips for you if you want to change your entire worldview.
Joshy, why aren't you talking to your mom?
Unlike my brother, who's a complete asshole that I just don't talk to because he's just a religious dirtbag, in a weird, fucked up way, my mother became more religious, the older she got. My dad was a fun, happy Hasidic dude that showed up to my mom. He was like 20, whatever. She was 16. She was living in Jerusalem. Her parents were Holocaust survivors. They both had their children and families lost in the Holocaust, and they just got married to each other. They were like cousins or something. They had like a retarded son off the bat. And my mom was like abused and beaten. You know, there's this syndrome that they call like second generation survivors or something like that. And my dad came along as a happy guy. He said, I'm moving to America. Come. And she just wanted to get the fuck out and she came. But my parents were never a real match. He was like, you know, gregarious, outspoken, funny, and loud. You know, he's like me minus the asshole part. And she was more of a, you know, introvert, cultured, and, you know, quiet person. She never liked that aspect of him. And wait, should I be talking shit about them like this on I don't know. Either way, they're both very good.
Listening.
Okay, good. Well, they're both very good people, but in different ways is what I'm trying to say. But the weird thing is that when I became non-religious, my father accepted it far more than my mother did, because my father, wink, wink, sort of said to me, you're a smart kid, Joshy. I'm pretty sure that if I listened to you and we had it out, that I would pretty much agree with everything, but I don't want to. My life is fully invested in the stuff that I'm doing now. And, let's keep it this way. And I've never spoken to my father about religion or anything else. So my father, pretty much, we have an understanding that he likes the lifestyle that he's living now, as opposed to my mother, that's genuinely bitter and upset about the fact that she never made a better life for herself. My mom watches TV. She reads books. She's cultured. She plays tennis. And she's miserable and upset at the fact that religion fucked her over. It really handed her a death blow. And she just rather than deal with my life vicariously and enjoy it and say, Joshy, let me see what I could have done. And she's angry and miserable at herself. This is my interpretation, of course, that she never did the choices and decisions that I did in my life and walked away from it. And as such, she's become more fanatic and more religious later on in life, as opposed to my dad that's like, yeah, fuck it, have a good time. Let me know how it was. She is ashamed of me. She doesn't like when I even wear flip-flops. She does, everything went bad. And I remember sitting with her one time in the kitchen. I said to her, Ima, which is mom, I said, you do realize that there are 7-8 billion people on the planet, right? You do realize that there are 13 million Jews in the planet. You do realize that out of the 13 million Jews, there are maybe 1 million retards that believe in Judaism the way you believe in it. You do believe that I don't pick a mate based on those qualifications, meaning the odds are that I'm not going to end up in a relationship with a girl that's going to suit you or make you happy or be a person that you'd be proud of. Are you trying to tell me right now that if I have children with this person, that they would either not be welcomed in your home or not be as welcomed as my nephews and nieces from my brothers that happen to be, you know, engaged and married to religious Jews? And she said, no, don't say that. I don't want to think about that. I said, whoa, don't want to think about that. I said, imagine if I was gay. In other words, you're saying 100%, if you don't want to think about non-Jewish children, you wouldn't even want my boyfriend or anything. I said, I got to be honest with you. If this is 60 years ago, I feel like I would make the argument for civil rights. If I had a black girl here, would you welcome a black girl into your home? And you'd be like, no, don't even say that and stuff like that. I said, Ima, I'm sorry. Sometimes I got to pull the Band-Aid off right away and make a lot of pain, then deal with much more pain in the future. I said, I honestly don't believe that you're in any position to be understanding what it is that I stand for or my lifestyle. And I'm not willing to risk the odds that I will happen to at some point in life find a person to procreate with that you would be okay with, that I'm willing to take the chance. I'm sorry. I think I need to deal with the pain right now rather than to deal with the pain of knowing in the future that my mom says no to my children and my grandchildren because they happen to not have popped out of a vagina that happened to be an Orthodox Jew. And all my brothers that are still somewhat sane that tried to get me to talk to my mother again, all my friends that say, come on, you only have one mother, why do you do this? When I tell them this, they really don't have an answer. They all say to me, you're right. Because like everyone likes to assume Joshy Berger is a crazy guy that just talks shit and it's not. But when I speak like this emotionally to them and they see the way I'm speaking and I say, look, I have no problem with my mother. I don't think she's a bad person. I just think she's from a different generation. She's from a different era and she can't relate to this. But that doesn't mean that I have to excuse it or apologize for it. I'd rather have pain 5-6 years ago, which was very painful, than constantly be in pain and in fear that she won't approve or accept of my lifestyle or of my spouse or of anything else. They all say, you happen to be right. There's really nothing we can say. And it breaks my heart because I have so many friends that are, you know, rejected by their families that did not do the move that I did, that they stuck it out and they were nice to the parents and then their parents fucked them over and then their parents, you know, they were the one that took the initiative. And I always say to my friends, I know it hurts. Take the initiative. You'll have pride. You know, if you know that your parents are not going to accept of who you are or the type of person that you are, don't. I know there's an evolutionary urge for us to want to be close to our parents and to want to be close to our siblings. I've not spoken to my brother for 13 years. I've not spoken to another brother for a while. But you know what? It's again, it's evolution. There's a reason why we feel the need to talk to these people, to be close to these people. If they don't approve of us, if they're not close to us, if they don't support us, fuck them.
My man.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Was that a bit too dark and disturbing?
No.
Look, I hope that by saying this, I can empower other people.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get people from Mississippi, from other things that are like, my parents won't accept me, this and that. And you know what? At first, I used to feel guilty telling them. Now I don't feel guilty. Go fuck yourself is what you should tell people. If your family doesn't approve of you, let them go fuck themselves. I'm sorry. Why are they your family? Why are they people that you care about? Why are they any better than a friend that you can make at a bar that you meet down the block that it's like, oh, dude, you're a cool guy. Why? The fact that you popped out of this person's vagina? No. For way too long, parents have been demanding automatic respect for procreating. And I don't think that's something that should come automatically. A cockroach procreates, an amoeba, I don't know, I think. But all these things fucking have kids. I don't think people should get credit just for the fact that they popped out of unit because it made them feel better about themselves.
I've never believed that honor thy mother and thy father. You know what? They should earn respect as well.
Yep. And I'm sorry and to
yeah,
be.
There's sometimes people just, yeah, like you're saying, that they just, they're from that, from an older generation. They just will never get over their prejudices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I forgot who the comedian was that discussed this whole, oh, they're from a different generation thing. He's like, oh, they were raised on a farm. They're raised. So what does that mean? The cows would be like, nigger. I mean, what do you mean they were raised on a farm? How is being raised on a farm an excuse for being a racist? So, yeah, I don't give people, you know, slack for it. It's the year 2013. If you can't love your children unconditionally, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Can we find something happy to end this on?
Yes.
Just a little note. There are so many fucking black cowboys, people don't even have a clue.
I don't know a single cowboy. I told you, I don't even know a fucking person named Dustin or Wesley. Idaho. What are like 9 people in Idaho?
And they're all skinheads, but him.
We've got, 1.6 million people, I think?
In Idaho?
Yeah.
Wow, I think I have that many people around my corner. But that's true.
Yeah. And the neighborhood in New York is bigger.
Wait, so you're talking. Oh, I got it. Go on.
I was stationed out at Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we all wanted to go to White Castle. Closest one, fucking New York City. So four of us got in a car, never been to White Castle. We all went down. GPS got us lost. We end up in the Bronx. And so we see one off the highway. We're like, all right, get off the highway, double back. And, you know, Aaron, he's the driver. He's looking off to the side and say, hey, some dude's playing a baseball game. And I start looking over. I'm like, nah, some dude's getting beat down with a bat. So, about a block later, there's our White Castle. And it was the best fucking food I ever had.
You gotta be, this is the saddest story I ever heard.
For little tiny little burgers, it was worth the trip. That was like 3.5 hours in the car each way.
This is so sad. My condolences. Oh. Wait, I'm being honest. Like, I don't mean to be a jerk, but like, why the fuck do you live out there?
Dude, have you been to Seattle? Come on. You need to at least give it. Aw.
It rains all the time. Highest suicide rate in the United States?
That's a propaganda we put out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tell
everybody it rains so the fucking Californians don't come up here.
Stop. I remember a comedian that I used to do stand up, and he said that he moved from Seattle to New York, and he was saying about how lazy he was. He goes, he moved from the highest suicide rate to the highest murder rate in the United States. That's how fucking lazy he is. He can't even do it himself.
No, I lived in the Seattle area for 3 years, and yeah, it's nowhere near as bad as the propaganda. It rains.
Only most of the time. Stop it. It's terrible.
It's sunny quite frequently.
Let's put us in the entire west coast of the United States. They got to burn down and start from scratch.
We could lose California and I wouldn't be sad.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty much talking about. You guys are collateral damage.
I was born
in
California.
Yeah. LA is the worst place I've ever been to in my life. And I've been to terrible places like London and stuff.
So have you been to – did you ever make it to Jerusalem?
Are you kidding me? I would go to Israel every summer. I've been to Israel like 25 times.
Fucking
hell. Okay, so you have.
Yes.
Now, granted, you would have been going at it with a, you know, deep cultural and religious ties to it at the time. What was the experience like for you there?
It's really interesting because, like, my grandparents were both in Israel because my parents were both Israeli, and my mother's parents were from Jerusalem. My father's parents were on a farm in the north part of Jerusalem, so in the north part of Israel. And every year when we would go to Israel, they would divvy up the summer, like half the summer I'd be like my parents, my father's parents' farm, and the other half in Jerusalem, my mother's parents. And I learned to hate both of them equally. And it bothered me a lot because I hated it so much, but for different reasons. Like the Jerusalem part, I hated because it was just – a constant reminder of the misery that, you know, I did on the last episode of SGU that Jews constantly are reminded of. It's just Jerusalem is filled with tombstones when you're a religious person, and just like prayer, like everything about it screams to you. It's not like Rome when you see all the ruins and everything that they give you a historical perspective of it. When you're religious, all you see is destruction and misery, and, you know, they tell you how our people used to be, and there's just that image of this is just the ruins of the good old times. And I'm really, really upset that I didn't have a better frame of mind when I went to my father's parents, because they had a farm with animals and cows. And right now when I'm living in Brooklyn, you know, with, you know, living near New York City and everything, and I don't see any animals other than pigeons, I'm upset that I didn't take more time to actually just appreciate and enjoy the nature. But the bottom line is that I hated both of it, and I fucking hated Israel my entire life. Israel to me was just the epitome of prayer and misery and just untold misfortune and everything. And I remember when I became an atheist, when I became secular, and I met some Israeli friends that were visiting the United States, and they're like, you got to come to Israel. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm never going to Israel. That's the most, to me, I didn't realize that 90% of Israel is secular and only 10% of them are lunatic religious people. Mm-hmm. And my friend's like, come to Tel Aviv. I promise you'll have a good time. I was living at South Beach then. He's like, I promise you, it's just like South Beach. I was like, it's just like South Beach? And he's like, yeah. I remember I showed up, and it was during Rosh Hashanah, which is the high holidays. It was the most, you know, other than Yom Kippur, the most important day of the year. And we went to a club. It was a party. It was 3 a.m. We're fucked up, and there's a DJ, Danny Tenegli, I think, was there. He's a big DJ from New York playing house music. And I'm sitting there on the Jewish New Year, which to me in the past was only reminiscent of misery and suffering. Mm-hmm. And in Hebrew letters up on the wall, it said Shana Tova, which means Happy New Year. And it said the equivalent of whatever was in Hebrew letters of what Happy New Year was, 1990, whatever. And tears started streaming down my eyes. My friends were looking at me like, are you okay? And to me, I had only heard the phrase or associated the words Shana Tova, which is Happy New Year in Hebrew, in a religious context. I had only heard it and seen it as like Happy New Year, misery, misery. But over here were a bunch of, you know, gorgeous girls jumping around, a bunch of, it was just a club and a party and a zone. Yet I saw these words and these letters, and I realized that Judaism is not just this oppressive cult-like religious context. I'll never forget. I stood there for like a half an hour, an hour, just crying and like trying to explain to my friends how emotional it is for me to be in a country, in a place that shares this language, these letters, these words that I've so long associated with so much suffering and misery and repression and everything. Till today, I have to be honest that I get incredibly giddy whenever I see Jews that are secular. When I hear about, you know, I just, you know, Point of Inquiry had a podcast this week with an Israeli scientist that, you know, was talking about Einstein's mistake and, you know, Steven Pink or anything. I've so much, when I found out that Christopher Hitchens found out that he was Jewish, I just found out that the Israeli that won the Turing award that's given out for computer science and stuff with Israeli, anything that's, you know, I just love the fact that there I have a newly discovered love for my people that is not associated or affiliated with the retard part that I grew up with.
Man, you just made me really fucking sad when you're talking about the New Year's.
I'm sorry.
Something. No, that's good. Something else, though, you mentioned on the, you're talking about it quite a bit on the SGU, that a lot of very religious Jews, revel in their misery. You're like, Mazel Tov. I mean, sure, it's congratulations, but that, you know, the breaking of the glass is to, like, bring everybody back down. You're having too much fun, you know, mellow it out.
It's a necessary component, because let's be honest, things are pretty fucking good right now, like Steven Pinker says. We're living in an age and an era where there's less war, less violence, less bullying, less misogyny, less homophobia, less everything. Religious people have been getting away for a really long time with pretending that shit is really bad. Because if shit is really good, they lose adherence to their faith. Because once it's good, people don't really care that much. Fear is a necessary component of every faith. So orthodoxy in general has always had the need to constantly remind its adherents of it seems good. It's really not that good. So the better it gets, the more they have to implicate and imply and show you why it's really not as good that it seems that it is. And as you mentioned, it involves breaking glass at weddings. It involves, like I was saying, that people thought it was fake, leaving portions of beautiful new houses, unkempt and brick face just so people see dirty and disgusting. I mean, there's so many sad things that religious people go to extremes to try to convey to their sheep that shit's bad, that, you know, just to keep them
in
check.
That's a dirty fucking trick.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
No, but what you're saying about Israel, my only experience there was one weekend in Jerusalem. And what was interesting to see was the incredible amount of religious fervor and tension in the old city, where you've got Christian sites and Muslim sites and Jewish sites, and they're all clamoring over the same little patch of dirt.
I fucking love it. There's...
And then I, Saturday night, we take a cab from the hotel, we head down to downtown Jerusalem, and we'd just been in that area a few hours earlier. We'd gone to the Great Synagogue. And go to downtown Saturday night, and the city was alive. It wasn't that sad, mopey religious group you see at all the holy sites. It was people just living life, enjoying life. It was incredible.
Right.
So you just pretty much have to wait until the old people go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a segment of Jerusalem that's trying to reclaim and retake back Jerusalem from the fundamentalists, and they're trying to be fun, and, you know, there are clubs and things, but there is just so much of what you were saying during the day that, for me, I just need to be in Tel Aviv. I need to be in the other parts of Israel. Too much of Jerusalem, for me, is steeped into that bullshit. Even the secular people that I know in Jerusalem, still there's remnants of that holiness, and, like, you know, they don't view the ruins like Romans view their ruins or the Greeks do. I think there is still a hidden element that they think that there is something special to their ruins that I think ruins it for me and doesn't allow me to just enjoy it on that level that I think perhaps you did.
Yeah.
Odd side note, there's actually a lot of people that, like in Greece, that are starting to worship Zeus and all the old gods again. They're making a fucking resurgence. Kind of weird.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
No, Christian Gnosticism is making a comeback in California.
Wow. See, that's so funny, because us Jews, just Jews and not Jews. Like, I hear Lutherans and whatever, Pastafarians and Adventists and all this stuff, and we just look at all you guys like fucking idiots. Like, you know, it's either you're one of us or you're not that smart. Literally, we grew up that way, as horrible as that sounds and as anti-Semitic as it sounds, because it makes people think that we think we're better than everyone. That's literally the way we grow up, that, you know, either you're Jewish, you're not Jewish. If you're not Jewish, you play baseball and you're this and that. If you're Jewish, you know, you focus your mind as the ultimate attribute and so on and so forth.
I need to have a laugh. Okay, tell me, what do you think about Jews for Jesus?
It's like fucking vegetarians for chicken. How can you take these fucking people seriously? They're the losers of the losers. I mean, is there any group of people in the world that takes these people seriously? Can I think of a crazier analogy? Blacks for KKK. Like, what do I need to say? But the whole point of being Jewish is to believe that Jesus wasn't the Messiah. When you say Jews for Jesus, that's the biggest oxymoron there is. I mean, these people are just the biggest losers in the world. And my problem is that I'm so contentious and I'm such an asshole that I can't go on a subway without engaging these people in conversation and without ridiculing them and mocking them. I was at the Mermaid Parade this past weekend, which is full of tits and women and just like debauchery and everything in Brooklyn, New York. And it was some fucking douchebag with a sign about God and Jesus and something. And like, I literally spent an hour just degrading him and mocking him and saying to him, wait, so hold on. Are you trying to tell me that everyone here is sinners? Okay. So you're trying to tell me that everyone here is going to hell. Okay, wait. So you, with the other 8 assholes around you, are going to this other place, but I can go to a place with all those women with the big tits and the coke in another place. So you're trying to tell me that I would rather be in your place with the signs without the fun? Then explain to me how this is something that's you're advocating. Like, I can't help myself. This is just, religious people are just fucking stupid. I mean, I fucking love it.
And on that note, I think we're about out of time.
Dude, I fucking love you.
Damn it! Anti-Semites. Well, guys, I really had a great fucking time. I thank you for this. I hope the editing wasn't and won't be too complicated and difficult. And let's do this again in the future. It was fucking fun.
Yes. Thank you very much, Joshy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zoom, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.